Can we pause here? We'll cut this. Bilal, when I come back, I got to throw some chicken pot pies in the oven because my wife is looking at the
kids. Rafa, you got to keep this pie in. Rafa. You got to leave this in.
All right.
We
so got to
put
do
the doorbell music
thing. Yeah, do the door. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm going to be 2 minutes. But right, Bilal, when we get back, let's do Netflix sports. All right, we're right
all
back.
All right, go on. Yeah, yeah.
I say he's putting multiple chicken pot pies in the oven.
Yeah, yeah. He
said chicken pot pies.
Rafi, you definitely got to keep this pot in. This is what's got in the middle of a pot. It's incredible.
Jesus isn't it Christ. 9 o'clock? Where is it? Yeah. Like 10 in the morning.
Wait, that's so good. All right, welcome to another episode of Not Investment Advice. We've got Trung Phan, Jack Butcher, Bilal Zaidi. Boys, we got a lot to talk about. Let's get straight into this because it's been another mad week. I feel that like every day passes, we send each other multiple things happening. Where do we want to start? I mean, maybe we should tell people what we're going to talk about because there's obviously a lot of crypto stuff happening right now. We are going to cover some quick hitters, some craziness going on with the pre-sales and the Solana ecosystem, what's been happening there. The Slurf debacle. I don't know what else you want to call this, boys. $10 billion burned.
Debacle?
I might even be saying the wrong word.
What's the exit strategy? Bitcoin is the exit strategy.
There we go.
What's
exactly.
The exit? Sir, what's your exit plan? Exit plan?
Definitely not a Slurf, unless you're okay. The developer who burnt $10 million. All right, so we will talk about that, but we also got some stuff on Apple, Google potentially partnering on the iPhone with Gemini. It's kind of interesting. And then Jake Paul's fight with Tyson. Obviously, we got to talk about that as well. So
we're holding the AMAs, right? We'll hold the AMAs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we're going to have time to talk about that in the future weeks. Let's get straight into it, boys, because this Slurf, what is it? Slurf, S-E-L-E-R-F. I mean, literally, we went to sleep. There was already the craziness of the day before. Booker memes, B-O-M-E. That went to basically the fastest.
It's a meme coin. Slurf is a meme coin. Let's make that. What's the market cap
right now?
It's like
every day was going, there was a new one and it was going to $1 billion, which is wild. Market cap, I don't even know. What, Jack, do you have any idea?
You want to pull up the price chart?
Let's give people what I'm talking about, boy. We're all over the place here.
Slurf.
Let's go Slurf.
Slurf.
500 mil, I think, something like that.
Okay. You want to know so funny? We in the YouTube comments last week, we had a WagMe commenter, shout out, appreciate you. He's like, why don't you guys just tell us what the name of these meme coins are? Like, we're all adults here.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
replied to
him. We're talking
like,
about it on this podcast.
It's
probably too, not a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it would have already been 24 hours late, right? Like, on time wise, on top of the fact that we're already late. So, like, you're like 96 hours in at that point. That's probably the main reason.
That's the whole cycle has already passed. You know, I sent you guys that the different phases of the cycle. But with meme coins, they're basically just every 4 hours. That's repeating. So
let's just tell to WagMe, YouTube, we appreciate you listening and commenting. That's probably the real reason why. It's just like this moves way too fast. Like this isn't like Buffett saying buy and hold Coca-Cola for 3 decades. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And to be very honest as well, we also don't want to be irresponsible right now because I think
have no idea what we're doing. Like that's the main reason.
And yeah, like obviously everyone can make their own decisions, and I'm sure you already are. But we don't want to be pumping stuff that we know is a bit stupid right now. So let's like you said, Jack. Good shout. Let's keep it organized. Let's start with what's happening with Slurf as an example
it's
of the mania.
Slurf,
the mania that we're seeing in the markets right now. The day we're recording, Tuesday, March 19th. By the time this comes out, it's Wednesday morning.
Slurf could literally be zero by the time you listen. Yeah. Or bigger than Nvidia. Like I don't even know, right?
And today was obviously there was a little bit of a drawdown in the market, so things have dropped significantly. But go on, Jack. What are you seeing?
What was I gonna say? Like this whole meta started with the Book of Memes last week, which was there's a guy, Dark Farms, who's a artist, been around the NFT world for years and years, has like massive community of people that collects their work, and they sort of put out this, I don't know how descriptive the tweet was at the time, but it was like launching something on Solana, send funds to this address and a 24-hour window. I can't remember how much that raised. I don't think it was astronomical compared to what we're seeing now, but what I've since learned, like retroactively, how people have ascribed like why it was as successful as it was, is that half of the money raised went into the liquidity pool. So normally it's just like a fraction of the money raised, and that makes the coin way less liquid, right? And this sort of unlocked this new behavior, I suppose, or people just started copying that idea of half of the money raised goes into the liquidity pool. And then people, I think, feel more comfortable like trading at size with it. All the exchanges get tons of volume from it. So like 8 hours after this thing happened, there's like 10 exchanges that are like, yeah, we're listing it.
So Binance went up very quickly, right? Yeah. That was the main one.
And this is the speculation.
Jack,
around
this is
this
the
one, it was
sloth
like,
coin. It's a picture of a sloth.
No, this is Book of Memes. This is
okay, Book of Memes.
A day or two before.
Okay.
And then this kind of, it's the same kind of echo or ripple effects that happened in NFTs, right? Like Bored Apes came out, and then it takes you 3 months to like come up with
Party
a project to respond to that.
And,
but this is like
animal.
Literally 20 minutes. You can set up the, carbon copy structurally of this thing, right? So the big one that we're talking about now is Slurf.
Yeah.
Which was, I honestly probably don't have the full depth of the story because I just couldn't. It happened like overnight one night, and a lot of people stayed up all night listening to these spaces and watching it out. I go to bed at 9 o'clock, boys, so I didn't really see it in real time. But someone raised all this money, raised $10 million, and then instead of putting it where they were supposed to put it, they destroyed the supply. So I think the kid was high and burned the supply of the.
Wait, hold on. There were clips.
Everything he raised.
There were clips but from his, the spaces, his, right?
Yeah,
where he was
I've
like,
got
hi.
A couple
he
up
like,
here as well.
Yeah. So I think he's like in his 20s or something. Like, yeah. Just like a hilarious scenario all around. And then again, my secondhand understanding of this is because none of the supply was distributed, there's nobody to dump it. So it just ran
so the
like
price
crazy
went up.
Because people figured that out. Like, oh, nobody holds the supply. And if I, you know, this is not just the same mechanic where the pre-sale participants are just dumping their allocation on retail as soon as it's possible for other people to buy it, which is basically the dildo chart that you see on every single one of these things, you know?
Jesus Christ.
I've never heard that term.
That's a technical term, yeah, Jack. Is that what it is?
Yo, Jack's like, oh, I don't know
Fibonacci
if you guys looked
lines
at,
and dildo
look at
chart.
The last 48 hours, clear dildo for me.
Yeah, that's
so
this
glad
is
we
the
asked
meta
Jack to
moment.
Explain this. Here we go. Perfect. Well,
and,
wait.
So that obviously that blunder just caused this insane amount of attention to be directed at this thing. And the kid is on Spaces at the time, like explaining it. People are losing their minds because they like because of all the previous quote unquote success stories, people like heavily allocating to these things, and then the money got destroyed. So, it was just, I think there was like 20,000 people in a space with this guy when this was happening, which in relative terms is like 10x engagement of anything.
Oh, that's massive.
He's
yeah.
gotten into like, you know, traditional finance Twitter, Trung's tweeting about it. You know, it's like it bled out so fast, and it's still like, there's still attention on this thing. And, yeah, that's basically it at the moment. We'll see what happens from here. But
Let me make one comment. Go ahead, Blah. You go first.
All right. I was just going to say there's also speculation. I think the question people asking, which we don't have the answer to, is was this actually a mistake? Or is this some big mastermind plan like this guy just
there's
had a
no
whole
way.
Plan? Because there's also people posting stuff, which again, I'm not sure it's verified, but they're saying, look, this guy was holding on to a bunch of this. He basically bought a bunch of the supply after he burnt it and then sold it after, and I don't know if that's verified or not, who knows, but there's a lot of theories going around. But I'll just play one quick 10-second video because there's too many of these spaces to not share one at least. Like, I don't remember which one this is, so if there's something bad said in this, just excuse me, but this was one. But this is the sort of stuff that was coming out. This adds to the meme.
Read the caption.
Well, he's going to say it. So I'll let people. Okay. Yeah, this is 14 seconds in the spaces.
All right, man. You know, I know you're not feeling great right now, but I just want to say that God gives his silliest battles to his funniest clowns. And dude, you're like, this was very retardio of you, but you know, like you're just in the arena and you're just trying things. So,
I mean, there's, I mean, again, obviously no, We're not trying to hurt anyone's feelings here.
Bro, we're going to get demonetized.
This is the stuff that is going. I mean, that was one. I heard another one of the main Slurf guy basically crying pretty much. And, you know, obviously, like, I don't know what's happened there. I don't want anyone coming at me for this, but it's a wild 24 hours, basically, right? And there's people on there kind of like adding to the jokes, and that just feeds more attention on this
thing.
Well,
let's add this. To Bilal, your point, I think they're very, it sounds like they're extremely contrite and apologetic, and like they feel like, again, these clippings, like you said, we're not trying to throw anybody under the bus. They seem extremely apologetic about it. But I want to ask Jack something about these dildo price charts. So there are some people, though, that made millions on this. Is this correct? Like, some people have made millions.
Yeah. I think when it launched, and again, don't quote me on any of the specifics of this, but there's people who figured that out, that there's no pre-sale allocation, that were dumping like 7-figure bids into this, like a second after it's created. And just because of the, I have to also share this. I don't know how much this guy tweets, but you guys saw the now infamous tweet that came out after he did it. Did you see that?
Well, Blau sent the, assembling a team. So like, let me tee this up.
Let me tee this up.
I'm going to tee this up for the listeners that aren't looking at the screen, but crypto is famous for infamous tweets. Doquan, steady boy, steady lads. And then this is what Slurf Soul, the @SlurfSoul account.
Oh, fuck. 2:25 a.m. I don't know where this person was at the time. But.
Yesterday morning, Monday morning at 2:25, probably Eastern at this point. We don't actually know where this person is. It's early. And this individual writes OFUCK. So this is in the Hall of Fame. That's what Doquan's saying, steady lads, when he blew up
Until
Terra.
Next week, probably, boys.
Yeah.
Well, I've got it right here, boys. So you can pull it up. You can reference. These are assembling the team.
It's so
do you want to read it, Trung, what you think?
No, Blah, go ahead.
We've got Slurf, SBF, one, what?
What?
We remember that classic.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, what is this guy talking about? Doquan, deploying more capital, steady lads. Aku, I didn't know this one as much. Happy.
But you got to have
that
right?
One is, there's $35 million bucks locked in an Ethereum contract. That one.
Still.
It's just, you can't get it back. God, it's just
All right, hold on here. Let me get into this quickly. I got to ask you guys a couple of things. Actually, I want to pepper Jack a bit, because Jack's like Jack's not like, he goes to sleep at 9:30. He just said he's not 24/7 trading this stuff, but he's obviously more plugged in than we are. And Blas has got a smile on his face because he knows I'm going to ask about the dildo candle chart.
That's the theme of the episode.
So let me summarize what you said. Okay. So last week, there's something called Book of Memes. And in the kind of these cycles of NFTs and shit coins and meme coins, there's this, what you refer to, Jack refers to as the meta. There's like this larger game at play. It's not just about the single asset. It's about, you know, if dog coins are popping off, that's the meta. So people try to just pump out as many dog meme coins as possible. So the meta here that you, if I'm listening correctly, was there's this Book of Memes. And then what Book of Memes did was there, variable on listing themselves was they're much more liquid than other meme coins. Other meme coins had much less of their supply listed, which obviously affects trading, right? And this is all psychology. So you're saying Book of Memes is like, hey, we have a new meta. Our meta is this. Our meta is the design of the trading itself. All right, so Jack, what would you call that meta that I just described or that you described to me?
I think it sort of took on the moniker of the pre-sale meta.
Okay.
And those mechanics were like attributed to it as like, if you're going to do that, now those are the agreed upon parameters that are quote unquote working or have worked once.
Okay, amazing. So what the working here, I think the main one in my eyes was you get listed on this exchange because it's all about attention, right? That's like, this is all about attention. If Coinbase is putting you on the exchange, that means you're going to pop up in the app. That's a positive, right? All right, so let's get into Slurf. So it's a 10 million presale. Is that right? So they did a 10 million presale. I'm trying to understand what the mechanics are. So, and they're supposed to, so these presales, like that every other presale over the past half decade, the idea is that you're part of it is you're supporting a development team too, right? And a roadmap for a project. Like part of that.
This is, again, my rudimentary understanding is like, the ICO meta, right? Where it's like, we're developing this chain and it's going to do this and it's going to do that. And we're selling something on that premise, is like, that got wiped out as a behavior legally. And now this is like, the only reason people can do this is because they're promising nothing, basically.
Oh, yeah.
This has no utility. This is an this is for entertainment purposes only, right? All the all of those disclaimers. That's what,
bro, Jack.
That's the underlying premise of all of this.
You brought something. Wait, go ahead, Bilal. Read this tweet. Read this tweet.
I'll get it out. So, this is for people who are only listening. This is kind of funny, but also just puts things in context. So, this is, you know, ICOs, as Jack mentioned, 2017 was a big, where there was like ICO mania, you know, but there were ICOs from before that. Like ETH had an ICO in 2014, raised 18 million, BNB raised 15 in 2017, Sol raised 2 million in 2020. Again, I don't know if this is even correct, these numbers, but it sounds about right. And then Twitter guy raised 32 million in 2024. So that, just to put in perspective, 15, 18 versus 32. And if you've been on Twitter in the last few days, you'll see people like send it to this Sol address. And like people, the amount of money that's been sent to random people, and more than half of them are probably scams. So it's been a pretty wild comparison compared to the ICOs. The ICOs needed a white paper. Like you'd come up with this ridiculous white paper at least, right? Oh, we're going to do this new mechanism. And it's, I remember doing that in 2017. There was one called Nano or Rayblox. And I was like, oh, this is going to be zero, you know, fees. And like, and it went up 30x. In that time, and now has never come back. You know, one of those ones.
So, Blah, you just to summarize for the listeners that didn't see the tweet you pulled out, it's just showing that basically these funding cycles, there were lower amounts previously in previous cycles, and you actually had to put in some work. Like Blah said, you had to make like a white paper, right? There had to be some modicum of effort. Now, a couple episodes ago, Jack brought up this concept of financial nihilism. So that concept came out of a long tweet thread from Travis Kling, I believe is his name. Travis Kling, hedge fund manager at Ikegi Asset Management. He wrote a viral thread, and the name of that thread was, and it nailed Bilal's entire point. His thread is called a lack of pretense that any of this shit does anything or ever will do anything. He's basically saying all these meme coins now, and as kind of Jack mentioned, because of SEC and securities laws, there is no even like pretense that there's any value of unlock, any utility, any roadmap in the future. It's just straight gambling, right? That's kind of, that's what Travis's thread was kind of about. And dug in that thread was this idea of financial nihilism. And I just want to unpack that concept of financial nihilism, because I think people here will intuit it, but we never actually said exactly what it was. Travis did a chart in his thread, and it basically just showed, look at gambling trends in general. Online gambling, sports gambling, online poker, retail participation in the markets. Just people are throwing Hail Marys left, right, and center, right? And the idea is, why am I going to try to grow this $500 at 8% a year? Because, well, I'm not getting 8% a year. And even if I do, I'm not going to be able to buy a house anyways after 40 years, right? I'm priced out of everything. The economy is screwed. The boomers own everything. So that's financial nihilism, right? And to Bilal's point and that screenshot he put up, so random Twitter dude raising 32 mil on this new pre-sale meta that Jack described. Yeah, that's just like, there is no pretense. This is a full-on casino, and we're having fun with it. And Slurf, that's the setup for Slurf, right? People are putting 10 mil into this. The expectation is that they're going to, put half into the pool. They burn half and it's just gone. The 10 people that had the 10 million pre-sale, they're gone. It's gone forever. But as Jack said, some people identified that it was burnt. It was gone forever. Supplies limited, and they minted. So can we actually bring up that chart, Jack? I think you had the chart up. I don't know what it looks like right now. But for the love of God, this is Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. I don't know if this chart's gone full dildo, but it's like whatever this chart is right now is going to change.
No, it's not. Hang on.
The market cap's over 500 mil.
Looks like a nice little value stock here, boys.
Yeah. Over 24-hour period, though.
Oh, what's that? The market cap is 500 mil. That is insane.
I love how you go to 7 days. It doesn't even have 7 days trading. That's what it literally change. Looks the same. Yeah, it literally looks the same.
Wait, hold on, Jack. Okay, let me pull up. I'm going to pull up a funny tweet.
Can I give one more thing before?
Go ahead.
No, I don't know if we talked about this before on the last episode, but the idea of unit bias. You guys, do you ever?
Is that the idea of like the side, like a 1 cent coin? Is that, it's also a meta, right?
Yeah, like this one is, you know, Doge is like 8 decimal points past zero. And WIF, the one we talked about a couple weeks ago, is, I believe these are really closely mapped in their mechanics, right? So the 500 mil market cap corresponds to $1 per coin. So the other interesting thing is that I don't know how intentional this is either, but it gives you like, here's the emergent quote unquote champion of the meme cycle right now. And you put a competitor out that has a 1-to-1 unit bias comparison.
Yeah.
So I think that also does something to keep it in the line of attention, because the average person can track the price of this much more easily than like, oh, did how many zeros did it have before? I'm not sure. What's the like exponent at the top of the run of numbers?
Like the 10th?
Yeah. So another sort of emergent property of these things.
Oh, did we lost Blau? That's fine. Okay. Well, it's not fine, but it's fine because we actually kept the recording up. So yeah. No, recording's still going. Jack. So regarding Blau, I just said we lost Blau, but that's fine. But I didn't mean it's fine. I meant it's fine because we're still recording. We're keeping people. Rafa, cut day. None of this. Yeah. People are seeing the inside baseball, how the sausage is made, how the pre-sale is created. Okay, Jack. So we can wrap up the slurf here because I want to do two things. I want to give a shout out to my friend Jeremy Arnold. He wrote a viral tweet thread about Slurf, which I borrowed a lot of information from. So Matt, when you mentioned that the main finance media got their hands on it, Matt Levine at Bloomberg wrote about it. He actually got in trouble because he called out the wrong person. He said Slorg. This guy named Slorg, individual named Slorg, was responsible for the mistake. And like, all in the replies, like Slorg was like, dude, it wasn't me. Like, please correct this right now.
Unbelievable.
Unreal, right?
Unbelievable times we're living. I need to issue a correction too, because Dogecoin is 13 cents. Okay. So it's, and Shiba Inu is 4 decimal places past the zero before you see an integer above one. Okay. So yeah, there's the interesting thing is they're like, mapping to that same, these two are playing in the same territory numerically. We'll see what happens.
Jack, just want to say this. What you're describing is similar to stock splits. Remember the stock splits like in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, Tesla did a stock split. So their share price was whatever, 30 instead of 300. And what it actually did was this. It doesn't actually change your ownership, but it actually does change retail participation, right? Because you can actually buy a share now. And also what it changes is you can buy options. It changes the options math. So you know that a Robinhood participants love a little options action. So back to Slurf before we wrap it up. My friend
Jeremy
Arnold.
Class A Berkshire stock too?
Yeah. Trump. Was it $250K a share? So
621.
Oh my goodness, dude. All right, so back to Slurf. Slurf wrote this perfect tweet, which encapsulates Jack's entire mindset over attention that Jack's talked about for the last 3 years. Jeremy writes, "This mistake about Slurf was very good for attention, and attention is the true value of any meme coin. So the obvious thing happened, and the new tokens that were released shot up 5,000%. It's exactly what Jack described. Now, the last thing I'll add is this, because listen, if once these things cross Trung's plate, it's dead. The meme, it's topped out, people. So I tweeted this out. I tweeted a Zendaya meme from Dune 2. She's got the angry face. She was mad at Timothy Chalamet, for people that wasn't watching it, but they don't need to know the context. I wrote Timothy Chalamet.
I know. I was cracking up too, God.
The best I could summarize the entire incident in a tweet was, my wife, after I tell her I put $10,000 into a sloth meme coin, slurf, pre-sale on a hot tip, then the creator burnt half the coins by accident, but the entire ordeal turned into a massive joke that pushed the market cap to 600 mil. And though we lost it all, they did a really funny spaces, which is literally what happened. And what's hysterical is that the Slurf Soul account retweeted my tweet, and then people started quote tweeting my tweet with like, okay, this is the top. They're retweeting this clown. It's over. Like, they're so desperate for attention that it's actually over. Anyways, amazing meme coin summary. Go ahead, Jack.
I just give one more thing. I think one other interesting statistic to put this in context is the 24-hour volume on the Slurf is $1.7 billion.
That's wild.
I think the entire Ethereum blockchain settled like $2.1 billion yesterday.
That is so mad. Like,
that's
that
mad.
Is
insanity.
Jack pointed out two things. You're talking about attention. Jack said the spaces at 20,000 people were in the spaces. Dude, that's like an Elon spaces.
Oh, I had people like I haven't heard from for ages texting me like, are you listening to this? This is hilarious. Yeah. Like it really like
cannon.
Exploded.
Attention
cannon. And like, you know, we've done these stupid comparisons, but like $10 million of paid media. This was by far orders of magnitude in excess of the amount of attention you could have gotten for $10 million if you tried to force it, right?
I actually want to know what the trading volume is for a big cap stock. It's like a billion is a lot, man. No, but I mean like a Tesla might move 50 to 100. Well, Jack's going to pull it out. Let's find out how much attention there is. I love that Jack said the entire Ethereum trading volume was $2 billion and this one meme coin on Sol was a billion. So Jack's pulling up the big cap numbers. So actually, this is the perfect segue. Let's talk about Apple and Google, which was the second topic that we were talking about, that Bilal teased. Bilal, could you give kind of the headline of what this news topic was from your former employer, Google?
Yeah, I'm just saying, before we do that, I just want to double check. Jack, did you want to talk anything about the ETF thing, or should we... It's kind of related.
We'll carry on with that next week or something. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Let's do that. All right. So let me just pull this up. Yeah.
All right. So the news is inside baseball. Bilal dropped off again, but don't worry, we're pros on this. So the news that Bilal literally was about to say, he shared the screen and I saw it. Bilal was literally about to say, Apple, who we've talked about here, and their AI play, Apple is in talks to partner with Google on their large language model Gemini. So famously Gemini a couple weeks ago went super woke, as we talked about, but outside of that super wokeness, they actually have a really good model. They have a very, very powerful model, and they're going to go to Apple for a potential deal. Now I'll ask Jack or ask Bilal. Bilal, you got your audio? Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's happening with my audio.
Yeah, no worries,
today,
man. Well, let me ask you first.
Computer keeps logging
since you're
off.
The neighborhood Google employee, former, what did you think when you saw the news that Apple might partner up with Google?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you said this before because my computer logged out, but what I read, and who knows if this is even going to be true, but they said, you know, Apple's already been, in air quotes, developing their own stuff specifically for Siri. And the way I think Scoble, is it Robert Scoble? The journalist, he wrote that he thinks it's supposed to be, essentially think of you're going to ask a question to Siri, that'll be Apple's version responding to you. But anything out of the scope of something that it can't respond to, they would, you know, tag in Google Gemini and say, we don't know, but Google Gemini says X. And that kind of allows them to wash their hands of any hallucinations or anything that is incorrect. Which is quite interesting.
So you don't think they're going to white label it? You don't think Apple's going to white label it?
I have no idea. But just based on what he said, and he's, you know, done some digging apparently and spoken to some people, I have no idea. I was pinging a few people, but no one wants to talk about it right now. So, but yeah, I do think if that's the case, it's kind of smart. I mean, my initial take was, oh, that's a little bit weird, just because it feels like Apple, like in this whole AI discussion, everyone's been saying, where's Apple? What are they doing in this space? They're kind of missing the boat. But other people would say, well, they're waiting for things to play out and then they're going to come in later and launch whatever they want to launch. So, but in my opinion, that, you know, their track record with this sort of stuff hasn't been the best. Like, if you just think of Siri as alone, it's still really poor many years later. That's, I think, the closest we can think of something as like an assistant or something talking back to you, right? So, yeah, of course, they've got enough money to invest in this and really do something if they want. But if OpenAI and Google are doing this, maybe it's easier for them just to tap into that. It just seemed like for their brand, it was a bit of a miss. And I was also surprised it would be Google, not OpenAI, right? Because Google and Apple obviously are like frenemies, especially in mobile. So, but they also do have, you know, Google and Apple deal for Google Search. So that it's not like they're not working together.
$20 billion a year, right? Like,
exactly.
These guys, I mean, I think you nailed the main point here. They already have literally, if it might be the, by dollar amount, the largest partnership in the world. Who else is getting paid $20 billion from another company for a partnership? I actually don't know if I'm speaking on my ass. That sounds like it might be one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah, probably is, yeah.
Right? So, well, until Slurf and Coinbase have a type of deal, or Slurf and
well, Lockheed Martin maybe is going to top those numbers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like well, on these like F-35 type of aviation things. So actually, Blau, let me give a little bit more details from the news article we talked about, Bloomberg. So Bloomberg reported this, Mark Gurman, which is kind of like one of the top Apple journalists in the world, my former colleagues at Bloomberg. If I hit you up at Google, you can get to hit me up about Bloomberg. He said something very interesting. He said, yes, Apple has all the money in the world. They do. But you actually know what's, it's not easy to just click a button and run a large language model out to a billion plus iPhone users. And there literally is only one company in the world that can handle that type of traffic. It's Google. Like Apple's, they have the Google Cloud. They have their personal chips and they have the models already. So, so even OpenAI might not be able to handle Apple as a client. Like if they were to flip on this large
language
stuff.
That's a good point, yeah. This would be kind of brought into this bigger, that's kind of how they do these deals, right? Like they, even the Reddit deal, right? Like again, without knowing all the details that was reported on, but that's not just, hey, we're going to pay X amount of money for this data. There's also, hey, are you going to use cloud with us? Are you going to use advertising with us? And are you going to be an advertising partner? And they package it all up together and they probably get a really good deal.
Well, actually, could you actually talk through that? Obviously, maybe you didn't work specifically on that team, but something I've heard is that Apple, let's say Gemini is the AI LLM of choice, right? And Apple's already paying them $20 billion a year. Would it just be like something, hey, just make it $18 billion a year? Like
I don't think so. I think it's more, okay, they would look at their overall partnership. There's a specific team that works on across Google partnerships. And then there's the like the core sales team, because the core sales team mostly works on ads. And then there's a core sales team for enterprise. But then there's one, often multiple teams, but one main team that their job is to make sure it all comes together. It's like called a one Google approach, they call it. So essentially they would go in and manage the relationship at like the C level and say, you're both spending money with us and making money for us. And so there's like probably 100 or 200 massive companies that have this sort of relationship with them. And so, like I said, it will be all those multiple parts. So it's enterprise deals, it's partnerships, it's how much, you know, Apple probably spends a bunch of money on Google Ads too, right? And YouTube and all these different things. So they will come together and say, because you're a priority partner, we're going to help you. We're going to create custom, you know, terms for you essentially. So yeah, there might be a negotiation point to say 18 versus 20, but I think it's more detailed than that. It's more who wants to give up what and who values something more than the other side or something like that.
Is there a single employee that's like captaining that relationship with Apple?
There would probably be like a whole team. Because it's quite a big, you know, it's $1 billion worth of, you know, money involved. There will be a like VP and then there'll be, you know, like ladders down and then there'll be like a few people within that. So like there might be a business development person working on enterprise, someone working on ads, someone working on YouTube. But then there's probably a point person that manages it at the highest level. That's my understanding.
That's very interesting. And I like, so it's called one Google. I like that idea. It's like this, like what
that's the verbiage they used to use. I don't know if they still use that, but yeah, that's kind of how they would, it was just saying, let's not have these fragmented conversations. Let's make sure it's everyone's talking from the same hymn sheet essentially. Right.
Jack, your thoughts on an Apple-Google deal?
Well, I was just going to present my research from the last section too, boys.
Okay, I mean, well, tell 24-hour,
24-hour, well, not even 24 hours. It's like market day volume on Apple is 3.9 billion.
Oh my goodness. Sol is that's a quarter it's doing 60 of Apple.
It's doing 60%. Yeah, yeah.
That is insane. That's
insane. That yeah. is insane. Wow.
All right.
Crypto
so,
is a whole entirely right, so, different yeah. animal.
I like so, that Jack's answer to the, yeah, Google. Google
yeah, answer to the Apple Google is, by the way, this Sol thing is mad. Sailor example coming in next. There we go. Go,
yeah,
go on, Jack.
I think,
any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's... makes sense to just like the amount of time it's going to cost you to build infrastructure that would compete with that is like people have probably just written it off as like, oh, we basically would be giving up by doing that. So it's the like, yeah, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, boys. A little proverb for you.
There we go.
Jack
there
just go. Told us he's out of the general advice giving game. It sounds like you're still in the game.
It sounds like there's an accompanying visualized value yeah. visual for that one there.
That one's already been done. That one's already yeah. been done. Yeah. yeah.
Well, Jack, how do you do? Let me hop on though. Let me add a couple of points to this. And we'll go back to our neighbor, our community, you know, Pod, Google, former employee, Bilal, a couple points I'd like to bring up is this partnership. I mean, dude, Google and Apple is so interesting, right? It was like Eric Schmidt used to be on the board of Apple. And then,
oh, yeah.
And then that. Steve Jobs found out they're doing Android and making their own phone. And he literally said, "Before, dude, the last 6 months before Steve Jobs died in like the fall of 2011, he's like, we have $40 billion in the bank of Apple. And he goes to Eric Schmidt. He's like, if you guys make a phone, we will go thermonuclear. I will spend the rest of my life spending this money down to destroy you." Kicked him off the board. Like, crazy. And if you read about that relationship, I mean, Eric Schmidt is worth $30 billion. Like Bilal's former colleague. This guy is rich, right? And
friend
extremely
of the pod.
Powerful.
Friend of the pod.
But if you read about his relationship with Steve Jobs, fawning, right, is like, desperate for Steve Jobs, like affirmation and
approval,
he's a king. Steve yeah. Jobs is the king, obviously. And when he got burnt in this Android relationship, because if we're being honest, like he was on the board of Apple, they were getting intel, like really deep intel on Apple's mobile strategy. So Steve Jobs was like betrayed, right?
It's so wild dude, that was a thing.
It's crazy, right? Dude, Larry yeah. Page and Sergey Brin asked Steve Jobs to be the CEO of Google, like in the early 2000s. At the time, like this is pre-iPhone, it wasn't that crazy of an idea. But Steve's like, nah, you know, I got my own thing. I got my own thing going on.
Got a little idea.
I got a little idea yeah. cooking. But the other thing I had to talk about regarding this deal is it does just make the most sense in the world, right? It's like Mark Gurman mentioned in the article. It's just like this is Apple's specialty. It's the iPhone. It's the hardware, right? And Google's specialty is making services, as Bilal has brought up before, what was it called? Billion user categories. What is the exact terminology inside the company?
I can't remember the phrase, but you're saying there's eight different
yeah.
products that have a billion users.
Yeah, right? So yeah. like search, YouTube.
Chrome, Gmail. Maps.
The entire yeah. point of any Google Docs. Product is to potentially be used by everybody in the world, right? For free. And yeah. Apple only serves about 1.5 only. It's all air quotes. It serves about a fifth of the world, right? But they do it at high margin, higher income people. So Google, it makes sense for them to try to tap into that market. Apple, if they were to build their whole LLM, like they released an open source thing actually recently, a paper that Bilal mentioned. But it doesn't make sense for them if they can't reach everyone, right? It makes less sense. So like they'll do stuff like they did Safari. They have an internal search team. All that team does is to keep Google honest, right? Like, hey, Google, like we're just letting you know, if you try to screw us on this $20 billion, which is free money, it goes straight to profit. If you try to screw us on this, we're just going to flip on our own search, right? And then the maps is the best example. We talked about this before. Blog, can you talk a bit about Apple versus Google Maps?
I don't know that much about it except for what, I mean, what we spoke about, but just my personal opinion is that Maps has just like fallen off a cliff over the last like...
Google.
I mean, it's still, in my opinion, still better than Apple Maps. I know you had said in the past you preferred Apple, which I actually tried using it fairly recently and was quite impressed by some of the like local recommendation stuff was quite cool because it had like Yelp reviews and stuff. But yeah, for a lot of people, they probably still use Google Maps, obviously. I don't know much more about, what were you going to say? Just the comparison, you mean?
No, what was that? Well, why did you, well, the comparison is important. You brought up because Apple, and what Apple basically did was they actually created a better Maps product for some people, right? In some people's opinion, which was unthinkable a decade ago. So when you say you think Google Maps has gotten worse.
Well, I think it's also more people use it. And so I don't know if that's how you measure it, but.
Well, let me throw it to Jack. Yeah. Do you have any opinion on Apple versus Google Maps?
I'm still in the habit of using Google.
Okay.
But the couple of times I have had Apple, it's much better because I use it in the car and obviously it's a native
Apple CarPlay Play or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So when I do end up using that, I'm like, oh, this is better.
Some Google parts Maps, that I prefer it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got to protect the shareholder value for Bilal. They are both good at different things.
my 7 shares in Google. So,
Bilal's nest egg. All right, people.
Jesus, I wish it was a nest egg.
50% Apple, 50% Slurf is Bilal. Yeah.
Just Apple. There.
All right, guys. There we go. Can we do this? Rafa, can we pause here? We'll cut this. Bilal, when I come back, I got to throw some chicken pot pies in the oven because my wife is looking at the kids.
Rafa, you got to keep this pie in. Rafa. You got to leave this in.
All right.
We
so got to
put
do
the
this?
Doorbell music
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, do the door. Well, actually, I'm going to be 2 minutes. But right, Bilal, when we get back, let's do Netflix sports. All right, we're right
all
back.
All right, go on. Yeah, yeah.
I say he's putting multiple chicken pot pies in the oven. Chicken pot pies.
Rafa, you definitely got to keep this part in. This is what's going in the middle of a pot. It's incredible.
Jesus isn't it Christ. 9 o'clock? Where is it? Yeah. Wait, like 10 in the morning.
Wait, that's so good. In fact, not only should this be kept in, this should be kept in as the start, the opening, the cold open.
Yeah.
Trung's like, wait a minute, I need to go put in chicken pot pies at 10 a.m., whatever it is his time. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Wow. All right, we got Trung back. Trung, let's. Rafa, we definitely got to keep the pot in.
All right, keep it in. Well, let me throw something to Jack here because I think Jack's going to appreciate this. Did you ever get the 12-pack of Swanson chicken pot pies at Costco?
No.
Is
that
the move, yeah?
Try it, bro, and then let us know what you think.
Try. What's the time there? Is it 10:30, 11:30?
Yeah, 45 minutes to cook those, man. I gotta have my son's gotta have a nice crust on that pot. He likes
there we
it.
Go.
He likes it crispy, but not too crispy.
Okay.
So we hit it on the lower side of the recommended cooking time.
There we go. That's Chef Trung in the house over here.
He wants flaky pie crust.
All right. Talking of flaky pie crust, let's talk about Jake Paul versus Tyson. Mike Tyson, 52. How old is Mike Tyson? Let's pull this up right now.
Dude, pull up the vid you sent. How slick is this guy looking right now? He's still got the...
He's 57. Wow. Born in Fort Greene, down the road from where I'm right now. Respect.
Oh, he's born in New York. I did not know that.
Yeah, Brooklyn, old school Brooklyn. This is not yuppie Fort Greene as it is nowadays. This is not $7 cappuccino Fort Greene. This is old school Fort Greene where he'd be fighting with pigeons on the street sort of vibe. So this is Mike Tyson, 57-year-old, fighting Jake Paul, famous YouTuber, / has done a few fights as well. But the reason we want to talk about this, one, because it's kind of interesting, but two, it's going to be on Netflix. Right, so first time this is happening. Obviously, you guys know a lot of the time these are pay-per-view on HBO or ESPN or whatever it is in whatever country you're in. They're normally $50, $60, $70. But this is the first time it's going to be free for anyone who's already a Netflix subscriber. So it touches on kind of new media stuff that we talk about in the pod. But also, this is a YouTuber fight, one of the greatest boxers of all time. Obviously, he's 57. He's not 28. Obviously, that would be
a bit out of his prime. He's on the tail end of the dildo curve.
But you know what? Funny though, like as a marketing strategy, it makes a ton of sense to have a personality that has been in the collective consciousness for 40 years to get as many people to care and sign up as possible. I think you could make the argument that even like a fight between the two most competent or talented boxers in the world would draw fewer eyes than this.
I think this might be the biggest status. This might end up becoming the biggest fight in terms of audience of all time. That's what I've heard other people 100%. Talk about. Because just 100%. The fact that it's on Netflix, how many people has Netflix got?
250 million.
I don't know if this is every country you're going to be able to watch it or what, but it's quite a big play. I think it's a very slick move from Netflix because I think they're going to be able to sell ads against it too, potentially. I'm assuming so. So if that's the case, you know, there's like I was listening on another pod and they were saying, look, even if you're that one of the guys was like, I haven't watched a fight in 15 years, but I'm going to watch this one. Another one was like, even if it's Saturday night, I'm going to be at the bar. We're going to just put it on the phone because everyone's got Netflix on their phone. So just the kind of casual viewing of this and then the wider discussion around it, I think it's a genius move. And I think that Jake Paul, as much
as
he's
a genius,
kind of,
man. I give to him. He's a marketing genius, man.
And even though he's kind of like
say whatever
the heel,
you want. Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of playing the bad guy because everyone here is like, all right, we've got this nostalgic images of Tyson badding man up, as we would say. Yeah, like
baddest,
just taking people
baddest
out.
Baddest man in the world.
Oh, my God. And so if Jake is the person everyone wants to see get beat, then you've got Tyson, a 57-year-old. I mean, obviously, objectively, it's not a real boxing fight like the way it would be a Mayweather-Pacquiao, obviously. But most people don't understand boxing, including myself. Like, I've watched a bunch of fights. I'm not a real, I don't understand the sport the way I know football or something like that, right? So for me, it's just a casual spectacle. It's like, so I don't know, anything else from you boys? Like, what else is there in terms of the Netflix part? Is there anything on that you feel like, do you think this could be the biggest fight
in
terms
of size? Didn't we talk about something else? What was the Peacock thing? That you had to,
oh, the NFL first, the first NFL playoff game when they made you download the app and they actually, great point, Jack. That was the most viewed live sporting event streaming ever. And I think that was about 30 mil. This will beat it. I agree with what Bilal said. I think, the criticisms of this event, and people should look at this peer marketing, right? They're going to wear head pads, it sounds like, super heavy gloves. For people that don't know in boxing, like
they're
heavy
definitely
gloves.
Doing head pads because I heard there wasn't, but
it sounds like it's just going
to
be like
do,
basically.
Man. I don't want Mike Tyson to get, he's 57,
no, that's what
man.
I mean.
This is wild.
It sounds like, in the back rooms, like
they're
Jake Paul
go,
and Tyson are texting each other and laughing. Yeah. Like, oh my God, we're about to make so much money on this. And like, of course, like Jake Paul is playing the heel to perfection. When he's like, I'm going to put the baddest man ever to sleep. Like, he doesn't actually mean he's going to beat up a guy 30 years older than him. Like, this is all for jokes, right? Not joke. It's for media. And he understands it so well. Crazy his turn from YouTuber to boxing, man. It's like quite honestly impressive. Like, him and even Logan Paul. Dude, Logan
doing
Paul
WWE.
Is like a legit WWE athlete, right? Just to Bilal's point about Netflix, I will say a couple things. You brought up a great point, Bilal, about the ads. Because if people remember, Netflix has an ad tier, a free ad tier. And Netflix, as part of the turnaround, they realized they can only, milk so much of the subscriber market. Like, they've already saturated America, right? If you don't have Netflix in America, like, who are you? Like, they've saturated the market. So that's why they've done the free tier. And what is in traditional television? Where is all the ad money going in free tier? Sports, right? So I heard something that was very smart. It's like, whether or not Netflix's free ad tier is working, they haven't really released the numbers to fully tell us that. And they're charging, whatever, blah, what do you think they're charging? They're probably charging on per CPM, right? Something similar for ads, television ads?
Yeah, it must
what,
be.
What would a TV, what would television, what would 30
I don't know
spot
off the top of my head, because I know online more, but it would
yeah,
be more
so
premium.
Online.
Online, I mean, like for video, I mean, $10, $15 probably, but wait,
right.
They'll charge way more because it's premium, I guess. So
this is actually a halo, right? This is probably to your point. They're showing, hey, listen, look, to traditional ad buyers at old media companies, we can throw sports, live sports events, just like you used to pay whatever, the equivalent of called 50 to 100 bucks per CPM. Like, this is why we're charging you 50. We're premium. we're like old cable. There's that angle that I heard about this fight. And they also have a whole sports vertical that they've been working on, right? Like Drive to Survive, very famously successful. We've talked about it here. It helped with F1, made it popular in the States. They actually stopped the tennis one, Breaking Points. So it sounded like that did not do well.
It was a golf one too, right?
Yeah, there's a golf one that's still going.
Apparently, but these are all like regular shows though, right? This is a live event. Which
What I'm saying is like, well, because they did do a live tennis event. Nadal and Alcaraz, two of the top players in the world. But apparently that didn't do very well. I think what I heard about the tennis thing is that they're not given very much access. Like the tennis world was still trying to control the image of the sport to the detriment of, you know, viewers want to see the nitty gritty. But the whole point is that clearly Netflix is, they're dabbling, right? They want to see if they can handle X amount of concurrence on a live event. They're seeing how much they're going to be a big buyer eventually for live sports. It's inevitable. So So ultimately, all of this is probably them trying to figure out if they can handle the tech, put a halo around the advertising business. And like you said, it's just like, we'll end up being the largest sporting event, a streaming event for this boxing type of fight ever. So,
but that's, I think, even because I'm looking right now, boys, the top selling pay-per-views, and because that's how they typically measure it, right? Is like dollars for pay-per-view, but also it says number of buys. So, like, so again, this isn't completely number of people watching, because a lot of people buy dollar amount. Yeah, well, there's both, but like, for example, the number one is apparently Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, $4.6 million buys, $410 million, right? So that's $500 million almost, but 4.6 million buys. So that doesn't mean 4.6 million people. That could be seven people in a living room watching together, like most of us would do. You go with the boys, you get the wings going, you're up all night. You know, that's the sort of vibe for boxing nights, right? But I think with this, it's going to be, I think that's going to blow it out of the water. Like 4.6 million people, I think it's going to be way more than that.
Oh, you're right. This will be 50 to 100.
Probably, right? Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming so. So
easily, I would think, yeah.
And in a way, you know, in the same way like Super Bowl, obviously it's a completely different thing, but Super Bowl is, you don't charge $50, $60 to watch Super Bowl. You do it, you know, on the regular channel, and then you make millions and millions on the ads. So this is an interesting moment. I wonder if Netflix, Amazon, these other guys are going to do more of these, because boxing really is the kind of anomaly in sports, right? Like people are willing to pay $50 to $70 for a fight. And it's just, why do you think that is? They don't charge it for the Champions League final or Super Bowl.
No, it's just that boxing, man, is the most basic, like the most, what's that word here? It's just raw, right? It's like,
yeah, Colosseum.
The Colosseum, there you go.
Exactly.
Well, do you remember, let me ask you guys this. Do you guys remember that Pacquiao Mayweather fight? I paid.
Incredible. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Hold on a second. My internet's going to cut. You guys keep talking about it.
All right, go on.
His oven
is taking over. How did he know that was going to happen? It looked like he was pulling something out. It looked like he was pulling out the wire or something. Anyway, so we can wrap this up shortly anyway. But yeah, the biggest fights, Floyd, Money, Mayweather, the top four. Mayweather, Pacquiao, Mayweather, Conor McGregor. That was a big one. Do you remember that?
Was sick,
Canelo.
Dude.
Third, yeah. And Oscar De La Hoya, also massive. And then number five, this is the closest Tyson got. Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson. Do you remember that?
That was after the ear bite, right?
That must be 99 or something, though, if I remember. Yeah, let me see. Lewis versus Tyson. Let me see. Yeah, let's see what
here's a content.
What was Lennox Lewis's nickname, Bilal? Do you remember?
He's British, right?
Yeah, he was a legend. Yeah. I don't remember his nickname.
Find it.
The lion.
It's gonna be great.
The lion.
Oh, I didn't. I don't think I ever remember calling him that. But
let me ask you guys this. Here's more of a content reco for the listeners. Literally, go YouTube. Mike Tyson's greatest hits on YouTube.
Oh my god.
Yeah, look at watch any of them. He
so good.
Dude, Pete Tyson was the scariest human being in the history of mankind.
In the YouTube era, which is interesting because now we're gonna see him go through that whole cycle. Though it's different though when he was 22 and hungry, right? Like now, you know, he's a bit chilled out. He's got his little weed brand. He's, you know, thankfully for him, it seems like he's living a much more peaceful life. But you see those training videos on Instagram. He is going in. Like, I mean, he looks dangerous.
Isn't it crazy that like the world hasn't produced another one of another Mike Tyson? Don't you find that insane in that amount of time? Like, there's not a boxer that is like, I mean, I'm sure this is offensive to people who love boxing.
Yeah.
But like that has such wide appeal. Tyson probably grew the sport of boxing just by such an insane order of magnitude. Tenfold
probably, because he was just absolutely entertaining. And the other thing is, Jack, I think there probably are some people since then that have been like, you know, heavy hitters or whatever. But it was also the era they were in. It was a concentrated media era, right? Like there were five channels. Everyone's watching the same TV shows. You're watching the news build up where they're like, you know, Tyson bites the guy's ear or whatever. Like everyone saw that. Whereas now it's so fragmented. Like, you know, so even though
it's like he's the obviously Oasis a household effect. Name.
Exactly. Yeah. Like
what's
everyone
the Oasis
knows.
Effect?
Did you ever, have you seen Supersonic, the documentary?
No, about Oasis? Good. No, I haven't.
Yeah. I think on the intro, there's a voiceover from Noel Gallagher. And he's like, this will never happen again. After they sold out Nebworth, was it three nights, 200,000 people a night? It's like this. And there will never be another moment in musical history like this, because the way music is distributed now and the way culture functions, this is a like pre-internet phenomenon. A very similar thing, probably.
Yeah.
They sold 200,000 a night?
Three nights in a row,
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
200? What was it? What is this festival?
Just a venue. It's just
their own concert, live? Right?
Have you seen them live,
yeah.
Jack?
I saw their last ever concert, but that wasn't pre-publicized. They just fell out after.
Where was it?
Jack, where was that?
Cardiff at Millennium Stadium.
Wow.
Oh my God, wow.
How many people?
That's a nice venue too. I mean, that's a proper arena.
That's probably 30,000-40,000, I would think.
Dude, they are, man, I know they hate they probably hate Wonderwall, right? It's too famous for them. Like it got too popular. They got also obviously way other bangers. I love how hard those guys are, how little they
74,000 capacity there, Jack.
At Cardiff?
Yeah. I don't know how many were there for the concert. Maybe it was less, but just, it's a cool looking stadium too.
Big. I was wrong as well. It was 250,000 people over two nights.
That's 125 a night.
It's still
insane.
Massive. The footage from that is just mental, man. I like heavily endorse that film, Supersonic.
Okay.
Yeah, incredible. It's very good. I watched it after you recommended it. It's very good.
Let's do a little corner. Jack, what are three lessons from that? No, honestly.
From that documentary
that I'll ask Bilal also. Well, give me some lessons.
Much, but go on,
let's get generic. We're generic lesson corner. People love this shit.
All right. Man, some of them are just, I don't even know if they're lessons, but the biggest observations, I suppose, is like, there was one quote in it that really stuck out to me. It was like, they're like, how long did it take you to write that song? It's like, how long does it take to finish Fish and Chips? That's how long it took me. Like the music was just like flowing out of them, you know?
Yeah,
like
they so weren't good.
They weren't like studying and like locking themselves away for 100 hours, just like
it's natural.
This feedback loop was just like falling out of them.
Where did it come from? Like did they listen a lot? Like, there must have been some base for this flowing to happen.
So Noel, he's like the musician, the like emotional songwriter, and then Liam, his brother, is like the sort of front man, loud, always getting in trouble, you know, like the contrast of those two was just like created that unbelievable moment in time, but they weren't able to keep it together because it's just so
way volatile.
Volatile. Yeah. A lot of, you know, great art functions that way, right? Yeah. It's like, the wheels fall off eventually.
That's actually
why as a spectator,
incredible.
You feel that. You feel that. And like, that's the one thing I think, like, growing up around that must have been so mental. Like the Britpop era when that was like popping off. Oh my God, it must have been unbelievable.
You said just before our era, you're saying, or? Or are you
I'm saying like coming of age, if you were like 18, 19, 20, when Oasis was like
Radiohead, yeah. Oasis, taking off. Unreal. Wait, but hold on, Jack.
We had DJ Sammy.
Sorry, dude. DJ David. Luck and MC Nick. Well, Craig David's a legend. Nah.
Craig David's a legend.
Yeah.
But Jack, hold on.
Yeah. You incredible.
I think I've seen Craig David live more than any of us. Just putting out.
You have.
I'm pretty more than any of us. I've seen like Talib Kweli like maybe 4 or 5 times. I'm pretty sure I've seen Craig David like 6 times or something. Because every time he comes to New York, I go because it's always fun.
He's a legend.
What's your favorite song? What's your favorite Craig David song? Blah.
I'd say, I mean, that one's a classic, but Fill Me In, probably. Oh, no. Do you know what? What's the old school? The Rewind. That's the classic. Yeah. That was his first banger.
Hold on.
Don't Love You No More. That used to be a big karaoke one. You know that one, Blah? Oh,
yeah. Also, I'm Walking Away. That was the Sweet Boy era.
That's a
where
tune.
You're like, I'm over this. I'm moving on with my life, you know? Just crying into the pillow vibe, you know what I mean? But go on, Trunk.
Hold on. We're not done with Jack here. Hold on. We're not done with Jack. Jack, you still haven't explained why is the music pouring out of them? Why was it? What was their was their 10,000 hours? What happened?
Man, just like the confidence, I think. Also, have you seen, if you go and look at their like press interviews? Oh, you know what? There is one lesson from that. That's very, very profound and true. Noel Gallagher, he's talking to everyone in the band. He's like, every time we get interviewed, tell them we're the best band in the world. Use that line over and over and over again. Every interview they went in like, we're the best band in the world. And we will be eventually. I don't know the exact verbatim language he used, but that's essentially the lesson and it happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you don't believe that about yourself.
The law of auto-suggest. Do you guys ever heard that? It's just keep saying it.
Didn't you post a Coldplay one? Didn't you post that about...
Yeah, Chris Martin called it.
What's his name?
Called it.
Oh yeah,
I learned it from them, I'm sure.
Oh, you're right. And actually, Oasis and Chris Coldplay have beef because Oasis doesn't think they're hard enough, right? They're like, who are these Charmaine like pussies, right? It's like, dude, I love how you said that. That is a great lesson. All right, but that's Jack, good. Hold on. Maybe there isn't an answer, but I need to understand what was it from their childhood where the music could flow out like that? Like the Beatles practice incessantly, right?
Oh man. This is not me saying that they're not incredibly talented musicians, but they just seem to like, when you listen to their music, it's
vibes, man.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's like, it's just, maybe it's that combination or that tension of the like real thoughtfulness being put through the like carefree, front man with swagger. It's like the contrast of that is attractive or something. It's just unbelievable. Lightning in a bottle type situation. I don't know how to describe
also
it.
Also the competition almost, right? Like that brotherly competition. Yeah, like even though there's love there, but they're like, no, you're the little brother, I'm the older brother and vice versa. It's like the outshining the sibling sort of thing. Their music is phenomenal though. That's like an era of music that you can't really repeat again. It's so good.
Yeah, watch their concerts. Like you can watch the Nebworth performance on YouTube too. Incredible.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, watch the document. You'll get obsessed with it for a little while, man. Every time you hear an Oasis song after you've watched that documentary, you have so much more appreciation for it.
We've got a Trunk thread coming soon from 10 lessons from the Oasis documentary.
It's kind of like the Beckham thing. You know the documentary they did on Beckham?
Oh, yeah.
Where like such a... And this is maybe just my experience, but he's a huge pop culture figure. And you're like, oh, yeah, he's a really famous guy, good footballer. But and then when you watch the documentary, you're like, oh, man, this guy was actually like on a different level the whole time. And
yeah.
When you're a kid, when you're 10 or whatever, you don't have an appreciation for that. But when you're, you know, decades after that and you're in a like maybe in the stage of your life past where they were at the time, like, man, that was like a special moment.
Foresight. Well, Jack, that's a good point, because on David Beckham, I was thinking about it recently as well, because just his like the business now as well, because I feel like a lot of people didn't think about that with him until way later. Even then, they were like, he's good at endorsements. But no, that he was actually
paining it.
He had incredible commercial intuition, and now we're seeing that
instinct
exactly. And he's doing that now with Miami. I have a feeling in the future he'll, you know, he's going to keep growing that. It's going to make a bunch of money. And then he might go back and buy Man United or something. You know, like if he really
That's the end game, right?
Alex Ferguson. That's the end game. You go put Alex Ferguson on the board if he was around. But I don't know if he'll be around by then because that's maybe some time out. But man, that is pretty incredible.
Have you guys got one more minute
or you got to run, Trunk?
Hit us. What are we hitting?
Just outside of the Oasis, that was a great little mini chat there. But on the boxing, really quickly, if you could pick one boxer from the past to bring to this era to really take it to the masses again, to really like blow it up.
What kind of question? Muhammad Ali. It's not even close, man.
That's fair.
Okay,
I should have probably said anyone apart from him because that's too easy.
It would be Tyson if it wasn't him though, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
it would be Tyson.
I would say, I mean, obviously Tyson. I would also say Prince Nassim. Do you remember him? Trunk, did you ever see Prince Nassim?
I did.
He was the featherweight, and he had the biggest mouth on him, and he was
handsome, in the ring, messing
with people. Yeah, and he was just making fun of people in the ring. Man, he would be doing flips in the ring and stuff like that. But yeah, we would always stay up for those fights, man. That was a lot of fun. All right, anything else, boys, before we cut off?
No, that was great, man.
Good one.
Listeners, if you made it all the way here, how much inside baseball did you get this episode?
Yeah.
Bilal dropping in and out, like the cuts and starts, cooking chicken pot pie.
The pie's going in.
Breaking out Oasis lessons. Like, this is what we're here for, people.
That was not on the agenda, but that's the best sort of pod.
I'm gonna send you boys some great clips, some great Oasis clips. I'm gonna rewatch that
because I did watch it on the plane once, but I want to rewatch that one.
I bet it's on YouTube for free. Let me check right now.
I think it's on. Wasn't it on?
Let me give a shout out to Celia because she tried to rent out the Nighthawk Cinema for my birthday once to screen.
Celia, the goat with birthdays. I went to one of your birthdays, but got invited to another one, and she seems to go all out. Like, incredible what she does.
Unbelievable. Shout out to Celia. Shout out to all the missuses.
There we go. I don't know if you're allowed to say
exactly.
that. But yeah, I mean,
of
the surprise
host
birthday
and the
every time.
Yeah.
Every time. It's a surprise. And Jack doesn't know every time, apparently. But yeah, it's incredible. No, respect Celia
is
the goat for that, man. That's very, very good.
Guys, right, boys, I gotta say though, the bull cycle is so much more fun, man. Every episode, it's always fun. But today was not even the old days.
But
yeah, today was an old day. But I mean, like, to hop on and for Jack to talk about the meta of Slurf, like, what a joy, man.
Yeah,
what a joy.
That is literally why we started this thing. And by the way, for people, we talked about, we're hitting 3 years soon, boys. You know that? It's in a few weeks.
Yeah, but we don't get nostalgic, son.
3 year
every day.
Special.
We grind. This ain't pointless.
Episode one. Every day is episode one, right?
There we go. Day one.
Day one,
perfect.
Son. All right.
That was a great chat, boys. Enjoy time home with the kid, Trunk, and I'll see you boys next week.
I got to get to it. It's spring break with the kid, you know.
I'm going
to
go.
You know, you can't be leaving him with the wife too long.
There we go. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Let us know what you think in the comments. Share it with a friend. And we'll see you next week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Peace.